This week we're going to talk about broken relationships and moral failures. This is a very difficult area for me because I hate to admit in any area that I'm wrong, and I've been kind of conditioned to cover up those things. My father told me that when I was growing up as a young man, keep your mouth shut and people always overestimate you in a business trade. You know, and it's true in business that the guy who sits there silently has the power so often. And Christianity said that to me when I first came in. If you have the victory in Jesus Christ, you don't need to have these problems. You can turn them over to God and they'll disappear. So I had some broken relationships and some moral failures, and there was no place in the body of Christ to go with them. And now in this new kind of relational thing that we're trying to do on this adventure, there is a place where we can begin to bring the brokenness and the failure in our lives, and that Jesus Christ has promised to meet us here and do it. But there's some real dangers about this, because every time that I confess a broken relationship or a moral failure, I'm involving other people who may not want to confess or may not want this thing to be in the open. And I need to be very sensitive if I'm going to publicly, for instance, here on this tape to you during this session, if I confess something that involves another person, I need to have cleared that with them in some way. Because we kind of, in this lifestyle, we're sort of in a goldfish bowl as compared to the old way of looking at things, and there's no sense in turning on a light and revealing the other people there unless you have their permission or have discussed it. As you go on through this session, I think it's very important to realize also that broken relationships are not just with a wife or not just with a child even, but business associates and neighbors and people at the church and a minister and a Sunday school teacher, all of these relationships. And it's not in the failures and not just the Ten Commandments that you've broken. They're your failure to live up to your own standards, you know, in terms of ethics and morality. But what we'd like to do is to try to begin talking during this session about some times when we were at fault, some times when we feel another person was at fault. How do we begin to handle these things? There aren't any rules. The nearest thing I've come to a rule is that when I have a broken relationship, somehow I have to see where I'm wrong in that relationship.
Yeah, and Keith, I think this is exactly where the hope that we have in God's love for us in Jesus Christ really makes a difference. Because everything in me wants to say, well, I was right, and I'm innocent, and I was sinned against. And, of course, the truth is there's nobody innocent in any kind of a relationship. There's always a degree.
Well, yeah, and I suppose the first thing is when I can see that even if I'm not wrong about the facts, that the kind of pressure I'm putting on getting the truth across is wrong. And when I can find out that point and confess, hey, honey, if it's my wife, say, hey, honey, I'm sorry. You know, I really was trying to muscle you down to prove I was right. I don't really know whether I was right or wrong. Or, you know, I still feel that what I was talking about, my feeling is about rightness, but my attitude was really sick. And I'm sorry, and I hope you can forgive me. Because I've found that until I can really see that I've been wrong, I can't begin to heal the relationship. Now, I may not have been wrong in fact. If I'm arguing, say, with a child, I may have been right about the facts of the argument, but my putting the child down, my needing to be right, I can confess that. I can say, gosh, I'm sorry. I really have pushed you around. But don't do that unless you mean it. I mean, I'm so manipulative that I always want to say I'm sorry first, but then their I'm sorry doesn't mean anything. You know, then you say, aren't you going to say I'm sorry? And, of course, it just makes them furious. One night I was going to speak to a sweetheart banquet for a Methodist church on loving relationships in the family. And I had to get up very early for a plane, and Mary Ellen said she'd get up and fix my breakfast. And so that night, one of the children was sick in the night. Well, she got up and took care of the child all night. Well, when one of the children's sick and I hear it, I wake her and say, honey, I'll get up. Don't bother. I'll get the child to let her know that I'm doing it. But she just got up and did it. This is her way. So the next morning, I woke her very early and said, it's time to fix breakfast. I just left time barely to make it. And she said, honey, I'm so tired. Would you mind if I slept this morning? And I didn't know about this, and I was furious. So I slammed the door, and I stalked in. I said, of course I don't mind. And I went in, I started fixing my... And then she got up, you know, guilty and feeling terrible, came in the kitchen, her hair all stuck up. And I said, oh, honey, you didn't have to get up. And just steam coming out her ears. And then I remembered the sweetheart banquet talk on the table before me. I thought, I can't go in this shape, so I have to confess to clear this. So I said, honey, I've been a real so-and-so, and I'm sorry. She turned around and looked at me, and she said, you sure have, baby. And I was furious. And so I'd just say, you know, don't confess, you know, unless you really mean it. Because if the other person agrees with you, they're only taking you seriously. What's your experience been with this, Bruce?
As I understand it, moral failure is usually the consequence of broken relationships, not the cause. I feel the cause of broken relationships is often poor communication. And as I understand myself, the thing before that is my tremendous need to be right that you mentioned. That somehow, if I haven't really heard the good news that I'm loved, then I've got to justify myself in my relationships and say, I wasn't wrong. And I didn't do that, and I'm innocent. And of course, the thing is, nobody's innocent, and I'm not. And now, part of the time, God is helping me to realize that I'm never innocent. Well, the other day, for example, Hazel and I had a tremendous fight coming from a great Christian conference. Marvelous thing. And flying back on the plane, we just got so ugly and mean, and she would not hear the things that I said we'd been saying, and she couldn't hear, and I couldn't hear. And I thought, if I only had a tape of this last hour to play back, she'd know she really did say that, and I didn't say what she thinks, and so on. And then I realized a day or two later that, you know, what she thought I'd said after 22 years of conditioning living with me is more real than what I said, and what I thought she said is more real than what really happened. The tape wouldn't change a thing. So we went back together. I said, now, what do you think happened? And she told me, and I could hear that as true. And she could hear me say what I thought had happened. And on the basis of that, there was nobody innocent. And we could begin to rebuild the whole thing when I could say, well, I really am sorry. If that's what you heard, it must be true. And you're probably right, and forgive me. And she could say the same. We could build the thing again. So I just think the start of the whole chain that ends in a broken relationship is my need to be right and justify myself. And if there is some hope in the good news, it is that I don't have to be right. I can be wrong, and I can be what you said, a so-and-so, and say, hey, you know, I really am sorry, and forgive me. And at that point, there's a chance to change the relationship, which may have to change the outcome, which is restitution or forgiveness for the moral failure.
Well, then let me say about confession, because I've gotten in some trouble. I'm compulsively honest, and often, you know, in order to clean myself, it's just another way of being righteous. I've used honesty as a game, you know, I mean, I'm going to be the most honest one. And I found that there are situations in which, for instance, if I'm in a business partnership and I've been dishonest, if I stand up publicly and say, I've been dishonest in my business, my partner is legally, in some states, going to go to prison with me. And he did not want to confess at all, say. So when one confesses, he always implicates other people. And I would say that in that case, it must be very private and go find a Christian brother, a pastor. The same thing is true in certain broken relationships in marriage. Sometimes people can't handle. A friend of mine had committed adultery, and it wasn't a friend, it was a guy I met on a trip, but he had committed adultery, and he went to his wife and confessed this to her, that I've been doing this regularly for a long time, and I just heard her talk about honesty, and I want to tell you. And he called me back over the telephone, and these are the quotation. He said, you know, and said a nasty word, and when the operator connected, I said, who is this? And he told me, and he said, okay, you said to be honest, this is what I did, and I'm taking my wife today to a mental hospital. How about your honesty, buddy? How about confession? And I realized that sometimes you need to go to a brother.
Keith, this is exactly the reason we are on this adventure together in this group. And I think that says that if I am serious about the adventure of faith, I can't go it alone. God and I can't do it because I'll lose my perspective.
Yeah.
And that's why when these scary big things come along, if there are a few people together with you in the adventure who can begin to hear you, hear your confession, give you some feedback about what you think your guidance is, we're going to make it.
Right, and also whether or not to tell you when it's safe and when it's good, because sometimes you ought to go and confess and you're copping out by coming to a brother. And the brother can say, hey, I think you ought to go to that person and tell them.
Right.
So this kind of fellowship helps us to know when our loneliest fears of being discovered as unrighteous come about in these broken relationships and moral failures. But the first thing, it seems to me, is to begin to isolate and to confess to each other some of the small things that we really never have been able to do. And now we're not talking about big things or competitive sinning. We're talking about places where our relationships, maybe with a child or a wife or with a friend, are not what they'd like them to be.
Some place where, because I believe I am loved, I no longer have to be right. And on that basis, why don't we go into our group and begin talking about this very, very profound, scary area?
Hey, that's great.
You know, Keith, as I come to examine my life and behavior, which is always a puzzle, I think there's a real relationship between broken relationships and moral failure. Now, to me, when a relationship breaks with somebody that is primary in my life, take Hazel, my wife, the immoral thing that I do is immediately justify myself and say, well, I'm innocent. Why is she so mad or angry? Or, all I did was. It's like when God says to, Cain, where's your brother? How should I know, And I want to be innocent. And I think the reason for this is that so often we are on two different agendas. It happens sometimes to you and me, Keith, or friends or people on a committee. I'm on one agenda, and the other person has a different agenda that's going. And what I've said is a real, from my agenda, is a real violation from their agenda. And they have a right to be angry. When they're angry, I never stop to say, well, what do you think I said? Then I begin to defend myself. I think, for example, if I want to reestablish my love relationship with my wife, and we say, hey, clear the decks tonight. We're going to have candlelight and steak and a romantic evening and music in the background, and we're going to be lovers. And we have a great evening and affirm this. Well, the next morning I'm leaving on a trip. And I look in my drawer and I say, hey, where's my clean socks and where's my underwear? And I begin to rant and rave. She says, Kelly, have you forgotten so quickly about last night? I say, well, last night was last night. Now I need clean socks and underwear. And all of a sudden, you see, I'm innocent of anything wrong. And the relationship is broken because we're on two different agendas. And I think I need to begin to hear what the other person is thinking I'm saying and doing with them. And then it makes sense. And the moral stance is to not justify myself, but to begin to hear what they think I ought to be saying.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we begin to be hurt and mad and pull away, and it's hairy.
Okay, if some of you now have something happened recently in which there was a discrepancy in what you thought you should do or what you thought was going on and what you actually did, you might share this and see if you can tell why you think there was a discrepancy.
I think this whole area of relationships and what they are, all too often what they can be, is perhaps the most exciting dimension of the Christian life. As someone has said, the kingdom of God is the kingdom of right relationships, and so it's here where God does his thing. And I want to say something that we're into together in this series of The Edge of Adventure. It has to do with what you and I, Keith, would call relational or incarnational theology, and that is that what you and I do is much more powerful than what we say. Now, as we're coming to the end of this session, I want you to think about the fact that what you are doing to people is much stronger than what you're saying.
Yeah, I think that we've been trained as Greeks. If a Greek wanted to know what you believe, he'd ask you, and then you'd tell him. If a Hebrew wanted to know what you believed, he'd follow you around for a week. And so your relationships, as you live them out, tell more about what you believe than what you think or say about it.
Yeah, I was thinking the other day, talking with another group, I was thinking about as a boy in the Great Depression, which my children hate hearing me tell about, but I love telling the good old days.
Yeah.
We bought cars that would last for 7, 8, 9 years. We wear them out. We got a brand new car. We put on seat covers. And they'd last for about 2 years, and then we put on new seat covers again, and a third set, and finally the car was worn out, and we turned the thing in for junk with brand new seats. I used to wonder, now who's going to sit on those brand new seats?
The junk man?
Car's no good, but the seats are brand new. And somehow, my parents were saying to all of us, we're not good enough as Larsons to sit on brand new upholstered seats. So we sat on covers or plastic covers on the furniture. I remember a little girl in my eighth grade class in Evanston, Illinois, that said one time that the most impressive thing in her life was that every day her mother used at every meal the good china and the good silver. I couldn't believe this. And she said, the reason is, Mother said, who is more important to me than my family? And I wondered, who are we saving our good china for in our family? But you see, parents say you're important, I love you, but what we do to our kids says, you're second class, you're no good, we put them down. And marriage is the same way with friends. So I'd like to suggest that as we go into our prayers this session and think about the coming week, what are the things we can do if we believe this hope that God loves us tremendously and those people with whom we work and live? What kinds of things could we do in our behavior that would model or demonstrate incarnationally that we think they're special and loved without saying a word, and see if somehow we couldn't use the more powerful method of acting out the worth and the affirmation of people around us.
Hey, listen, let's take just a minute now of silence, maybe 2 minutes, and think of a couple of specific people and things that they may have been kind of crying out for silently that we might do for them this week, and then have our prayer.